You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
like at. Living like you're living. Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dream.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the bangs thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them in their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, better do, can do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, of course, you got to do it anyway. So don't be whining. Don't be complaining. Just do it. It needs to be done. Stop procrastinating. Get it done, and you will. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can go to the archives. Our good brother, I kind of consider him our engineer, our director, and that's Brother Kwaku. Really appreciate you, brother. So because of him, you can go to timeforanawakening.com. On the right side, scroll down until you see the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed. And click on that, and you can find the previous recorded programs that are titled and dated. Here's the rundown here at Time for an Awakening Media. And, of course, our number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You can join the conversation, and you can give us your African perspectives. On Mondays, after my program in the evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, all times I'm going to give are Eastern times, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philly from 6 to 8. Right after that, 8 to 9. Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365, which is also videoed on Facebook or simulcast on Facebook. This evening, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Sister POC, Revive. Tomorrow, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And, of course, always talking about ULU. And, of course, we got the cafe, so I always try to plug the cafe. Cafe ULU, which is 2036 Sylvan Road here in Atlanta in the Sylvan Plaza, open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And, of course, we specialize in coffee. We have Cameroonian, Tanzanian, Kenya, Ethiopian. I know we also have some Panamanian as well as some Brazilian. We specialize in coffee. Check out Cafe ULU's website, CAFEULU.com, Cafe ULU. Also, please check out the Us Lifting Us website, usliftingus.com. And also, too, when you go to that website, check out or go to InThesetimes.com. Put in InThesetimes.com. We have an excellent article. And when you put in InTheseTimes.com. Put in Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. And that's us lifting us 9 p.m. to about 10 on Thursdays. Baba Kimbizi, Baba, I think he's our sister Nanana, and Baba Akima, Brother DJ, all of us good brothers and sisters in Us Lifting Us, which you should become a member, brothers and sisters. Check it out. Cooperative Economics. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. Time for an awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And, oh, you know what? I skipped Tuesday, didn't I? I sure did. I apologize, Dr. Rogers. Dr. William Rogers, the host of Black Reality Think Tank, on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. Excellent program last night. Really appreciate Dr. Rogers. And finally, getting it together. We finally got it together, Doc. All right. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not me. It's Sister POC. Revive on Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Proof of Consciousness, Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, the conference coming up April 14th at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, the 21st Century Black Survival Conference, April 14th. They're focusing on three areas: spirituality, culture, and survival. The spirituality component is the master teacher, Oshua Kwesi. He will talk about African history and spirituality and the origins of the Bible and Quran. The culture segment, Baba Mamalimu Baruti. Baba Baruti will talk about warrior's character. And then survival component, the irritated genie, African survival in the 21st century. You don't want to miss this conference coming up here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. I was in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta, and there's a kiosk. This brother, Lamar, he has We Buy Black. We Buy Black. It's black or American African owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Check them out for products and so forth. They got the brothers who has detergent. They're selling his product. There's a liquid detergent that is produced by us. And I'm saying to you, dear brothers and sisters, if we don't support each other, who will? Who will? I sell on WeBuyBlack.com. American African-owned businesses, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. Also, too, a plug for my good brother, Bomani. Brother Bomani has been taking our brothers and sisters back to the motherland, to the continent, for many years. Next month, he's taking a group of brothers and sisters. We're going to try to get him back on to see how that is going to go and how many people he has signed up. His website is AfricaForTheAfricans.org, Africa, not spelt with a K, but spelt with a C, ForTheAfricans.org. You can also check out Brother Bomani. You can give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429, Brother Bomani Tayembe. And you can also go on Facebook to check out photos, facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I. Or you can go to YouTube, youtube.com/Bomani2007 to check out videos. You know, the field trips, round trip from Delta Airlines from Atlanta to Accra, Ghana, transportation and tours throughout Ghana, morning daily exercise and meditation, daily continental breakfast and gourmet dinner, naming ceremony and ancestral celebration, hotel accommodations, double occupancy, business and investment conference and networking, and entrance to all the sites and activities. The Ghanaian tour next month. Brother Bomani. Today would have been the 90th birthday of Maya Angelou. She would have been 90 today. But yet, you know what I'm going to say, right? You know it. And still we rise. And still we rise. I say we because I know she said still I rise. But still we rise. To Maya Angelou. Yep. This Friday, I have a guest. I'm Brother Marshall. Brother Kenneth Marshall out of Dallas. Wrote some books. I've seen some posts that he had, and I told him I was, pretty familiar with what he was stating, and so invited him to come on to the program on this Friday. We'll chop it up in the first hour, Brother Kenneth Marshall. Some of these people I mentioned, just like Brother Frank, my Wednesday co-host, and good morning, Brother Franklin Jones. How are you this
good
morning?
Good morning.
How are you doing,
good
brother?
Morning, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. What about you?
Fantastic. It's an honor to be here with you on this 50th anniversary of the death of Dr. King.
Ah, yes. That's our subject for today, brother. That's our subject for today and how we look at Dr. King, his life, the 50th anniversary, and, where we at and where we still going. And in spite of all of that, we'll look at the three triple evils that Dr. King talked about. Racism, economic injustice, and militarism, and how it's affected us. And we'll also look at and talk about, if Dr. King were alive today, what would he have to say about what is going on, not just in this country, but in this world? So we'll talk about that and get into some other stuff. But first, I know you probably heard it and you'll probably hear it again today, especially today. There's all kinds of activities going on around the country. I'm not sure if they'll ring 39, because, he died at the age of 39. They're supposed to ring some bells 39 times. I think he was killed 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock Eastern time. I'm not really sure. But I know it was somewhere around there, And also, too, I don't know about you, and I'm quite sure to you, too, Brother Frank, that you know where you were when you heard about the assassination of Dr. King. Where were you? What were you doing when you heard about it?
Well, actually, I was so young, I can't remember where I was.
Okay.
He was assassinated in 68. I was born in 65.
Okay, my bad then. Okay, because I was a teenager, and I had been playing ball all that day, after school, and I walked home, and I was balling too. I was kind of tired. I got in the house, and my mama came down the steps, and she was crying. I said, "What's wrong, mama?" She said, "They killed Dr. King."
Wow. Wow.
They killed Dr. King, And then, of course, cities around this country erupted. I would venture to say at least 35 other cities. Wow. Yeah. But we're going to talk about that.
What my mother did tell me what she remembers after he was assassinated. She said she noticed that they started, she started seeing more TV commercials with black actors in it. Mm. She said she wondered what was going on, but she said she noticed that they started putting more black people on TV, more black, mm-hmm. a part of that social engineering.
Right.
So that's what she remembered. She started seeing black commercials, black advertising, a bunch of black people on it.
Yeah. And some more shows started to come out. I think one of the first ones was Julia with Diane Carroll playing a nurse who was raising her son, But all the other stuff. I think what happens, of course, is that when something happens, there's an appeasement. They throw some crumbs at you, to chill you out for the moment. But, of course, as status quo is maintained, business as usual. That's how that goes. But we're going to play that sermon at Mason's Temple on April 3rd, 1968.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. Lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country. Maybe I could could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Dr. Martin Luther King, has he had his last speech at the church, Mason's Temple, in Memphis, Tennessee. He was in Memphis, Tennessee to support the sanitation workers. In fact, I was watching today, and they had a choir from Prairie View A&M that was at the Lorraine Motel, because it was an American African owned motel. And of course, we're talking about 50 years ago. And so, you know, and we're talking about the South. And so they were there. They didn't know Dr. King was there. Their director knew that Dr. King was there. And he wanted the choir to sing for Dr. King. And even though they didn't get back to the hotel, even though Dr. King didn't get back to the hotel, you know, until late, this is not the third. This is on the third, rather. This was back a few weeks earlier. And they all got up and they sang for Dr. King. There was about, on the program this morning, there was about seven of them. But of course, their full choir was there and they sung for Dr. King, you know. And it's interesting because Dr. King has a figure, has a man, even though he was, you know, flawed like all of us are, because we're men, we're human beings, we're not perfect, you know. And but he put his life consistently on the line under all the vicious attacks against him, and not just by the Caucasians, but sometimes even us. I had respect for him, Brother Frank. I had respect for Dr. King, but I guess I came up at a time in the latter part of the 60s. In fact, there's a very good documentary on HBO called King in the Wilderness. And it chronicles the last 3 years of his life, around 65 to 68. And probably the most contentious part is when Kwame Ture became the head of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And of course, you know, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, you know, it wasn't about turning the other cheek. It's just like the Nation of Islam. You know, Nation of Islam, if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was talking about black power. And, of course, Dr. King wasn't down with black power. In fact, he said in one of his speeches, talking about black power or black supremacy is just as bad or evil as white supremacy. You know, because King's idea was this vision, his dream from the 68 march on Washington, August of 63, his march on Washington was the I Have a Dream speech. And of course, that dream was this idealistic place in America where we all were equal, where we all had free. I'd stop laughing, man. Yeah.
Dr. King always tried to use moral persuasion
yes.
upon a people who had no morality when it came to race.
There it
of non-whites.
That's right.
So that was the flaw in the situation he had. Tried to use moral persuasion to people who didn't give a damn about us.
That's right.
You know.
In fact, that's what also, too, Kwame Ture said. He's using moral persuasion to a people who are amoral. They don't care. And I think, you know, that's why when you look at 50 years later, you can mm-hmm. see that. It's worse today
yeah. mm-hmm.
than it was even 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to get off into this particular subject of symbolism without substance, because that's
yeah.
what you see. 50 yeah. years ago, you knew what time it was. 50 years later, now, because there's a few Negroes, a few dark faces in high places, but yet our condition is worse because that's the symbolism.
Yes,
because there is
yes.
no substance.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. In fact, in 68, Hoover said that Dr. King was the greatest threat to the nation, the greatest threat. The president at the time, JLB, would call him the nigger preacher.
Yeah.
Now, it's amazing here. It's now some many years later, they honor him with a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And they put a statue reminding them of him in Washington. They created a symbol that they use to control the masses, because he's a symbol that they use to keep us docile, the symbol of peace. That's why they quickly say, what would Dr. King do? Be like Dr. King. And that's why they marginalized Malcolm X. They don't want us to follow Malcolm X. They turned Dr. King into someone they can use. When during his lifetime, we know they had him killed. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So it's all about symbolism. You're right.
See, so when you're alive, you are vilified, you're demonized, you
yes.
know, you are being portrayed by the general public, you know, because what was interesting, I seen a piece when he talked about protest and so forth and the anger that some Caucasians have because of protest. And
mm-hmm.
the percentages, Brother Frank, are the same then as they are now. The
mm-hmm.
protests against Dr. King and the protests against Black Lives Matter, or the protests
yeah.
that Colin Kaepernick displayed or anything like that. The same.
Yeah.
Or even worse. And so I'm just saying, you know, here is a man. And like I said, he's a human being. He has his fallacies. In fact, one of the things that they wanted to do in his, to smirch or smear his image, of course, was to talk about the extramarital affairs. He would, FBI would do some setups. They would call Claretta to say, yeah, your husband is over to some other, you know, all this stuff like this. I admire her for sticking with him. I mean, hey, he's a man. I'm not saying what he did or didn't do, but I'm saying is that we have to understand the evilness of this system and what they will continue to do to maintain their position of dominance and control. And it was that way then. It is that way now. And for us to believe otherwise is a pathological denial of reality and history. And it you know, it kind of bothers me, man. Well, it always bothers me. You know, it always bothers me. But, you know, here, you know, just like in the documentary, they talked about when he was at Boston University for one of his undergrad degrees, I believe. I'm not sure if it was a graduate degree, whatever. But he had a relationship with a Caucasian woman. Well, of course, Daddy King was adamant because he knew what he had hope for his son. And particularly having a Caucasian, if he had maintained that or even married her, you know, that it we wouldn't have Dr. King, okay? You know, that wouldn't have been happening. So his father was adamant against that relationship happening. In fact, I read something a few days ago where they named a Caucasian lady. I think she has passed as well, you know, and had some comments from her that I guess had been stated some time ago of how their relationship was, you know. But that, you know, that couldn't happen, you know. But since that time that he began to advocate on behalf of those who have been disenfranchised, those who have been marginalized, and those who have been discriminated against and so forth, he was under severe attack by the FBI, by this government, by individuals and institutions, you know. And then the irony, you know, and I think one year prior to his assassination by this government, he spoke at the Riverside Church and at the in New York, huge cathedral. And it was at that church that he gave the speech that even some of his cohorts didn't want him to do. Even some of his guys who were in his group, SCLC, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and in fact, the NAACP, Roy Wilkins, came out against it because he condemned the American involvement in the Vietnam War. And then once that happened, he had broke from Johnson, and Johnson was very upset. All the Caucasians were very upset with what was happening and what Dr. King had done. And of course, to me, it was just a matter of time before this government found a way to kill him. Now, I was listening, I don't know, Brother Frank, I was listening to one of the public affairs programming here, 89.3, which is more African-centered to some degree. You know, it's a public affairs programming. I don't know if you listen to that station, but there was two brothers and a sister on the other day. I think it was like, what is it? Yeah, Monday. And they talked about the assassination and how it was constructed, because you are led to believe that James Earl Ray was, what is the term they use now? Lone wolf. By yourself. He did it all on his own. You're led to believe that. You're supposed to believe that. But of course, if you know, Judge Joe Brown, he used to have a TV program on, and Judge Joe Brown resided over Dr. King's young son, Dexter King, trying to get to the bottom of the assassination. He did not believe that James Earl Ray did it. In fact, he visited James Earl Ray in prison a couple of times. And of course, James Earl Ray died. I don't know when he died, probably about a decade ago. But what that brought out, though, was the fact that the United States government was responsible for the assassination of Dr. King. It wasn't brought out that the United States government was the fault of Malcolm X's death, but I believe that he was. The United States government was at the fault of Bobby Kennedy's death, John F. Kennedy's death. The United States government, and it's just as he said in that speech at Riverside Church in New York in 67, he said, I fear that my government is the greatest purveyor of violence on the planet. And would you go ahead?
Yes, you're right. In 1999, the King's family hired an attorney. They filed a civil case, which included against the U.S. government. And the civil case is only for a dollar. It shows that they didn't want money. But they won the case, and where the government was found guilty in 1999. For the killing of Dr. King. When they lied all the evidence together, the evidence did rule against the federal government. But lots of people didn't hear that story. But you can Google and see the transcript of the case. This governor was found guilty in a civil case in 1999 with the involvement of the assassinated Dr. King. So, you know, it's really amazing when you look at the entire picture. But the problem is the oppressors control all the narratives. They control the media. They tell us which stories to look at. They control our thinking. So we don't see the big picture. We don't see the scam they're pulling over us, you know? I guess that's what Dobrik said, we're the people in the matrix, you know?
Right. There it is. Yeah. The black matrix. Yeah.
Yes, we're the people in the matrix.
Mm-hmm. And see...
I mean, yeah.
No, no, you go ahead.
It's amazing to say, I mean, just think about it. This person that the current administration in 68 viewed him as a thorn in their ass, the greatest threat to America. All of a sudden, they have him assassinated. Then some years later, they create this image of him to appease us, to make us docile. And we all fall in line to that programming, you know? And even when you look at the speeches we see about Dr. King that's on our wall with our library, it's in the book, they show that Dr. King talking about, they show a more peaceful Dr. King. They don't show the Dr. King speeches of 68, 67, where Dr. King was really bringing it. You know, with his eyes is open to the reality of the immorality he was dealing with. You know, I'll use moral persuasion. He talked about all these things they were doing to us. He talked about he gave a speech where he talked about the special grants that they were giving to poor whites while denying it to blacks. Programs for getting homes for whites while denying it for blacks. This was in 68 he was talking about it. It's you know, but they create a model of Dr. King, and this model of Dr. King they create is used for a symbol to control us. You know, the reason why they gave Dr. King a holiday because they created an image of him, and they use that image to control us. Follow Dr. King all the time. You know, Dr. King would not agree with this, and so on and so on.
And so then when you come up to these commemorative. His birthday, January 15th, or his whatever that Monday falls on, all these particular programs, it's a holiday, you know, you reminisce about this, that, and the other, but you think on the lines of integration, of assimilation, of this idealistic, I mean, you know, when he said, I've been to the mountaintop, I've seen. You know, I mean, I get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. What the hell is the promised land? Because if you ask me, and if you ask me what the promised land is, for I would say pretty much my adult life, I know damn well over 40 years of it, it ain't here, and it ain't no damn kumbaya with crackers. That's not the promised land. The promised land to me is where African people are independent, self-determining. Yes. You know, liberated, and they're sovereign. That's the promised land. It ain't, you know, because it's clear to me that Caucasians want to always be in control.
Yes.
They're
unelected committed to maintaining their dominance and control. That's just them. That's who they are. I love that saying you say when you say symbolism without substance.
Yes.
A more recent example in our lifetime of it was the election of Barack Obama.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Symbolism, but no substance.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was a symbolism that benefited white society because it gave the illusion that America was had now passed racism. It actually helped the image of America. But in terms of what it actually did for black people, absolutely nothing.
And see, you can look at the numbers on that, Brother Frank, in terms – brothers and sisters, please join the conversation with me and Brother Frank at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. But see, you can look at that in terms of him being elected and what was done. What was done for the country, he was a great benefit. Barack Obama helped maintain and sustain the privilege – that Caucasians created. He helped maintain and sustain that. He didn't do nothing to disrupt that. In fact, I venture to say that any person who is the president of the United States, that person, be it male or female, Caucasian, American, African, Latino, Chicano, whatever, The objective and the job for that person is to make sure that the status quo is maintained, to make sure that whatever it is, oh, let me say it to you this way, to make sure that the illusion of inclusion is there as well. Because that election of Barack Obama gave us the feeling and the thought that now we have arrived, things will get better, he will do this. And so there were some of us who said, we can't put any pressure on him to do things for us. Because, he has to get reelected. But in the second term, boy, just watch him do his thing.
And nothing happened. And nothing happened. I mean, it's amazing. In fact, when the doing his while he was president, they took away the voters protection bill, the federal voters protection bill.
Yes.
Had there been a white president in the House, we would protest it.
Yes.
If it was Obama, we didn't say a word.
No, we didn't say nothing about Obama. So, we were just so enamored, so happy that the president of the United States, the man in the White House, was black.
You know what's so amazing? We were saying things like, you know what? At least he represents himself well. We were talking to himself well.
Yeah.
At least your dad, he showed a black man to lead. And it showed that we were so marginalized by white society's anti-black propaganda that when we said, well, at least he presented himself well, and we were saying, that's it? Yeah, people believe as long as he did that, that was enough for the black community.
Yeah. Him and his family, they were so presidential. And him and his wife, they were so presidential. It looked so good. It was so nice. No scandals, no this and that.
It goes back to that term, you say symbolism without substance.
There it is.
Exactly. Perfect. Without substance.
Exactly.
Image. That's how they control. Like you were talking about how they keep showing these wealthy black people on TV, the wealthy and the athletes, the actors. And those people make up less than 1% of our assets.
Yeah.
But by continually showing them on the screen, oh, we've arrived. We got basketball players who make $10 million. It's really ridiculous how they use these symbolisms against us.
Right.
You know? And they perpetuate it through the media. You know, we have to understand what's being done to us in order to overcome it. And what's amazing is the old racism was easy to explain. You could find a black man who was mentally impaired, and you could tell him, don't go across the fence in the dark after night. The white folks are going to hang you. And that black man and his mental impaired state would say, okay, I know, don't go across the track because the white folks are going to hang you. And he knew when it got dark, come on this side of town. But the racism that they use today is so sophisticated that a lot of our people get trapped in the racism. They become victims of the racism, programs them, and turn them against themselves. You know, it's just amazing when you look at how sophisticated the system is that they're now using against us.
And they will continue to do so as long
as it keeps working. As long as you keep working, they're going to continue doing it.
No doubt.
There's no plan of stopping this. It only stops when we wait to recognize it.
Right.
And we stand against it.
Right. It's self-perpetuating. And the only thing that will stop it is us when we open our minds and our hearts to break those chains, or as I like to say, to release that vice grip that they have on our minds. You know, we have a caller, 267. Go ahead, caller. Good morning. 267.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie. And I'll say good morning to your guest, Brother Frank, right?
Yes, brother. How you doing?
All right. Hey, I'm listening to you when you were talking about most of the black folks saying we can't speak up against President Obama because, you know, he was the first black president. But that's not that's just a game that's been played on us since I can remember. I'll give you an example. Wilson Good.
Oh, Philadelphia mayor.
When he took credit for the bombing of a black neighborhood and said he would do it again, the pundits was out there again. The Democratic Party is very strategic. Oh, we can't come up against them. We can't do this because he's the first African-American mayor and we need to get him reelected. And we've had, like, I don't know how many African-American mayors since then, and every one of them has stabbed the black community in the back. So, you know, like you said, we got to open up our minds and our hearts to the game that's being played. But the thing about it, most of these people know racism is here, right, and won't say nothing, won't do nothing. They just want a paycheck. So, you know, I mean, Brother OG, they accept the fact that it's a racist government. I mean, they accept this fact. You know, there's a program that comes on a local radio station up here. And this is the reason why I don't listen to it, but two of the people that were listening to it both vented to me about it. They had a Yama Van Zandt on, and she was talking about, like, we're going to have to stop this foolishness about our black men being shot down in the street with no weapon, innocent black men being shot. And the thing about the next thing the host said was, all right, so when are you coming here to Philly and do this and have your program? No response whatsoever to what that woman said. And she's not no activist, but I thought that was, you know, and both of these call listeners called me and they vented to me about it. I said, well, that's why I don't listen to it.
I'm here.
Because these are the kind of Negroes you have on those type of radio stations, WAOK and
right.
The one in Chicago, and
right? WVOA.
The one here, yeah. That's mm-hmm. not that man. That's garbage yeah. radio.
Yeah, same in Milwaukee. Yeah, WNOV in Milwaukee. It's the same thing on these commercial stations. In fact, I venture to say a lot of them are paid for by the Democratic Party because they constantly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Ralph.
I'll give you something even better. Jews, Jews.
Jews, yeah. Yeah. The man. European Jews. Yeah.
Yeah. And the minute you bring them up, boy, they even yeah. Sharpton. Boy, they you can see them like almost dropping their mics and everything. Yeah. So mm-hmm. no, I mean let's talk about real white supremacy. Yeah. Who controls our airwaves?
Yeah.
Who controls our publications in our schools? Who control and that's a word I don't use, white supremacy, but let's be real. Who controls the airwaves? CBS, and CBS. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Sure.
ABC, NBC. We know who these people are. The yeah. Anglo know who these people are. But with that, but everybody's been trained to be afraid of them.
Exactly.
And you know what? Yeah,
exactly. I mean, even to this day, that you know, I'm going to play in a few minutes. Who killed America? Amir Baraka's poem. You know. Somebody, mm-hmm. yeah, somebody killed America. You know, somebody blew, no, excuse me, it's somebody blew up America. That's the real title of the poem. But, you know, he gives examples of who did this and who. And, of course, when he says this, you know who did it. The Europeans,
you know.
The Caucasian, you know. And yet, and it still yep. persists. And the misleadership, if you want to use that term, that we have today. In fact, Jesse and Al have both been proven to be what? You know,
agents.
They both yeah. have proven to be agents. And so to me, you know, their credibility is non-existent. It's just like me.
Right.
It's just like me, brother. I've been saying what I've been saying, like I said, for a long time. And I've worked with young people. And what I've tried to do in my life is be a man of my word, to have some good integrity and good character. And so when people who know me say, okay, yeah, Brother Oshie, he's on the one. And to me, that's more important than any amount of money. Any amount of money. Because if my integrity and my name and so forth has been sullied, then I can't say nothing. I don't have any, you know, after I've been exposed as a hypocrite, exposed as somebody who is saying this and then doing that. But yet, here we still have these cats. In fact, not only that, Jesse, when he found out he had early onset of, what, Parkinson's or something? There was some kind
right.
of, he asked for a funding, like a GoFundMe or something.
Yeah.
And all the money that he has made, you know.
That he has stolen at the hands of our poverty.
Yes.
You know, holding corporations black. No,
yeah.
He wasn't really holding corporations black. No, those were the people behind him holding these corporations black.
Right.
Blackmail. You know, and we need to, you know, like Al Sharpton's, one, a couple of his people in his organization, you know, they got crapped on by the Zionist regime, and he ain't say a word about either one of them, showing you what he's really about.
Right.
See, this stuff, man, this stuff here, man, we have to start calling. And I think I sent you a video, Brother Oshie, of Barack Obama and his whole cabinet that was behind him.
Yeah.
Did you see? Nothing but Zionists.
Yeah.
Nothing but Zionists in his whole cabinet.
Yeah.
So, you know, brother, so while we're saying we can't say nothing, they behind the scenes doing what they do. Mm-hmm. And right now, I don't know who it is. I heard the lie that Trump said about how he was going to give us tax breaks. My man, I had to pay Uncle Sam back a whole bunch of money this year. We ain't getting no tax breaks, bro.
No, not us.
A lie.
No, not us. He's giving tax breaks to those multi-millionaires and billionaires. That's who gets the tax cut. Our situation is dire, and it's systemic, and is perpetual. You know, in fact, when was the last time that the people who work and so forth had a wage increase? They haven't. Wages have been stagnant for damn near 20 years.
Well, not only that, Brother Oshie, when he had his campaign, he had Carrier, like they were one of the people that he was promoting. Carrier has now laid off an extra 700 people. They're moving their plant to Mexico, and they stole the people pension.
Man.
So, you know,
so
right now you see the Anglo getting mad. The teachers are out there in Oklahoma and all over. They know they've been had.
Yep.
But me, you, Brother Frank, and the rest of us, we knew the man was a con artist and a crook. But they just let their hatred of us get in the way. And, boy, and you know what my wife said to me? She said, you act like you're glad this is happening. I said, I am. I said, I lived under Reagan.
Yep.
I lived under Bush. I lived under all of them. And I'm glad when he takes his foot and stick it up there behind because they voted for him they thought,
You know what? Let me say this. Initially, because I was talking plenty smack prior to the election, and I said he was going to win. Honestly, I hate Hillary Clinton so much, and to me, I couldn't even fathom. I've never voted for a Caucasian to begin with, but be that as it is, I just couldn't stand the Clintons for what they've done, and they have been exposed. But, you know, I knew that he would be terrible. I knew that because of his arrogance.
We would be in slumber.
Yeah.
We would be. She put a few handkerchief heads around her, and we would sleep on another. You know what I mean? So, nah, Brother Oshie, I love the job.
You broke up on me, Brother Ralph.
So I said, I love the job this president is doing. People misunderstand me because he done woke a lot of us up.
That's right.
That America, you know, racism is alive and well as apple pie.
And
the thing about it, he's sticking his foot right up in their asses.
Yeah.
Excuse my French, but he's turning his foot all up in their behind. And they don't even—they're too dumb to realize it.
And he's doing it globally. Just recently, I seen where he said to any nation, if you want some aid from us, you better vote with us. You better kowtow to what we're bringing. Otherwise, you'll get nothing. You know, damn the fact that many countries around the world are in the impoverished condition because of the United States. In Europe,
don't forget that little small country over there. That's the real Washington D.C. over there.
Yeah, Israel.
The real Washington D.C. Because you notice they done destroyed every nation that had weapons around them. Mm-hmm. Every Arab nation, is destroyed. Only one that might be capable of doing some real
Saudi Arabia
right now is Iran. And they're looking at them closely.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think more so of Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia, they kowtow to the U.S. and to Israel. You know,
you're right.
But you can see that you're right. All those nations around them have been severely damaged. I mean, they've been bombing them back, like so-called to the Stone Age, Syria.
Women and children.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah. So, man, these are criminals, Brother Oshie. But I just had to call in to you and Brother Frank.
All right, brother.
I'm listening to you guys on TuneIn.
Okay,
but I had to call in, man. We got to call a spade a spade.
Oh, no doubt.
We're going to use that word white supremacist. Well, we better know who they really are. They're blood. They're not no spirit out here.
Right.
This is flesh and blood that's doing this.
And see,
that own these things that keep our people in bondage.
And see, what I've always said, and what I've said about the European Jews, and that's what I consistently call them, because they are not the Hebrews of ancient times. These are late converts to Jews. These are Caucasians. These are the Ashkenazis. These are white. In fact, Nasser said, I don't recognize these folks because, I mean, when Israel was there, the Jews were there, they were black, and they came back white. Who are these people, you know?
Yeah.
You know, who dominate and control Judaism. But we're going to take a break. Stick with us.
Yes,
we appreciate it. We're going to take this break, Brother Frank. You got something to say?
Yeah, right, Brother Ocean.
Now, you going to a break?
Yeah.
I'll sit after the break.
Okay. All right, then. There, brothers, we're going to take a break right now. And, you know, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. Somebody blew up America, Amira Baraka.
Somebody blew up America. All thinking people oppose terrorism, both domestic and international. But one should not be used to cover the other. Somebody blew up America! They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan. It wasn't our American terrorists, it wasn't the Klan, or the skinheads, or the them that blows up nigger churches or reincarnates us on death row. It wasn't Trent Lott, or David Duke, or Giuliani, or Shunla, Helms retiring. It wasn't the gonorrhea in costume, the white sheet diseases that have murdered black people, terrorized reason and sanity, most of humanity, as they pleases. They say, who say, who do the saying? Who is them paying? Who tell the lies? Who in disguise? Who had the slaves? Who got the bucks out the bucks? Who got fat from plantations? Who genocided Indians, tried to waste the black nation? Who live on Wall Street, the first plantation? Who cut your nuts off? Who rape your mom? Who lynch your pa? Who got the tar? Who got the feathers? Who had the match? Who set the fires? Who killed and hired? Who say they God still be the devil? Who the biggest only? Who the most goodest? Who do Jesus resemble? Who created everything? Who the smartest? Who the greatest? Who the richest? Who say you ugly and they the good lookingest? Who define art? Who define science? Who made the bombs? Who made the guns? Who bought the slaves? Who sold them? Who call you them names? Who say Dama wasn't insane? Who? Who stole Puerto Rico? Who stole the Indies, the Philippines, Manhattan, Australia, and the Hebrides? Who forced opium on the Chinese? Who owned them buildings? Who got the money? Who think you funny? Who lock you up? Who owned the papers? Who owned the slave ship? Who run the army? Who was the fake president? Who the ruler? Who the banker? Who the devil on the real side? Who got rich from Armenian genocide? Who the biggest terrorist? Who changed the Bible? Who kill the most people? Who do the most evil? Who don't worry about survival? Who have the colonies? Who stole the most land? Who rule the world? Who say they good but only do evil? Who the biggest executioner? Who? Who own the oil? Who want more oil? told you what you think? That later you find out is a lie. Oh, oh. Who found Bin Laden? Maybe they Satan. Who paid the CIA? Who knew the bomb was gonna blow? Who know where the terrorists learned to fly in Florida and San Diego? Who knew why five Israelis was filming the explosion and cracking their sides at the notion? Who need fossil fuel when the sun ain't going nowhere? Who make the credit cards? Who get the biggest tax cut? Who walked out of the conference against racism? Who killed Malcolm, Kennedy, and his brother? Who killed Dr. King? Who would want such a thing? Are they linked to the murder of Lincoln? Who invaded Grenada? Who made money from apartheid? Who keep the Irish a colony? Who overthrew Chile and Nicaragua later? Who killed David Sabeco, Chris Hani, the same ones who killed Biko, Cabral, Neruda, Allende, Che Guevara, Sandino? Who killed Kabila, the ones who wasted Lumumba, Marlene, Betty Shabazz, Princess Di, Ralph Featherstone, Lil Bobby? Locked up Mandela, Daruba, Geronimo, Asada, Mumia, Garvey, Dashiell Hammett, Althea Sutton. Who killed Huey Newton, Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, Mikey Smith, Walter Rodney? Was it the ones who tried to poison Fidel? Who tried to keep the Vietnamese oppressed? Who put a price on Lenin's head? Who put the Jews in ovens? And who helped them do it? Who said America first and okayed the yellow stars? Ho, ho! Who killed Rosa Luxemburg? Liebknecht? Who murdered the Rosenbergs? And all the good people iced, tortured, assassinated, vanished? Who got rich from Algeria, Libya, Haiti, Iran, Iraq, Saudi, Kuwait, Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Palestine? Who cut off people's hands in the Congo? Who invented AIDS? Who put the germs in the Indians' blankets? Who thought up the Trail of Tears? Who blew up the Maine and started the Spanish-American War? Who got Sharon back in power? Who backed Batista, Hitler, Bilbo, Chiang Kai-shek? Who? Who decided affirmative action had to go? Reconstruction, the New Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society? Who do Tom S. Clarence work for? Who do come out the colon's mouth? Who know what kind of skeezer is a Condoleezza? Who pay Connolly to be a wooden Negro? Who give genius awards to Homo Locus Subsidiary? Who overthrew Nkrumah, Bishop? Who poisoned Robeson? Who tried to put Du Bois in jail? Who framed rap Jameel Alameen? Who framed the Rosenbergs, Garvey, the Scottsboro Boys, the Hollywood Ten? Who set the Reichstag fire? Who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? Who? Explosion of owl, the newspapers say. Devil's face could be seen. Explosion of owl, the newspapers say the devil's face could be seen. Who? Who make money from war? Who make dough from fear and lies? Who want the world like it is? Who want the world to be ruled by imperialism and national oppression and terror, violence and hunger and poverty? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is most powerful? Who you know ever seen God? But everybody's seen the devil. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. like an owl who know the devil. All night, all day, if you listen, like an owl exploding in fire. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like an owl who know the devil. All night, all day, if you listen, like an owl exploding in fire. We hear the questions rise in terrible flame, like the whistle of a crazy dog. Like the acid vomit of the fire of hell. Who and who and who, who?
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You've been listening to Amir Baraka, Somebody Blew Up America. Who? Well, we all know who. Brother Frank?
That was profound. That was profound. It made you think. Made you think.
Yeah.
And also, it's kind of sad at the same time because it was so true and so powerful right in your face. And it reminds us of the reality we live, the reality we've done, you know?
Yeah.
Profound. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It's everything, you know?
Yeah, I heard it I hadn't heard it in quite a while, and I heard it a few weeks ago. I said, let me find that. Because, you know, it's on point. It is what it is. You know, I know that he, because of what he said about the European Jews, you know, he caught the most flack about that. That above any other thing that he said in that damn near 10-minute piece, he caught the most flack, the most controversy about saying that these European Jews stayed away from the World Trade Center.
You know,
and in fact, if he would have knew at the time that he presented that, because I know he died about what, 5 or 6 years ago, Amir Baraka, that the Jewish dude who owned building number 7 in that complex of the World Trade Center, and how that was a clear implosion, and how he, well, listen, that's for another program. We're going to get back on track here. You know, but once again, you're listening to African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Also on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black, 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, this evening, Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. with Revive. Tomorrow night, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, at 9 p.m. And then Friday, 8 p.m. until it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk, 10 a.m. to 12 noon with Troy Wilmore. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Sister POC with Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., with his, once again, it's Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. I don't know, sometimes I just say their names back and forth, but of course, it's Brother Elliot is the lead host, but that's his co-host. And they do a fine job. I love listening to them, and they bring some really good people. We have a caller, 646. Go ahead, caller.
Brother Ochi into your guest, Hotep. Hey, listen, you know, Baraka, one of a kind, man. That's all I'm going to say about Amiri. Amiri was one of a kind. I don't know if you ever had the pleasure of being in his presence.
Yes, I did. He came to Milwaukee, to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I attended. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he was a hell of a character, man. That's all I'm going to say about the brother, man. You know what I mean? His wife is a beautiful woman. You know, real strong African sister who don't take no games.
Right,
you know, and I was just thinking about that, you know, with the passing of Winnie, they had this damn Negro on Facebook had the nerve to equate Oprah, Gayle King, and Joanne Reed with Winnie Mandela.
Oh, man. That's blasphemous.
I tell you what I wrote.
what I wrote to that Negro. When he in the class by herself, Oprah, Gail, Joanne ain't even in a class of African women fighting the oppressors.
No, because they're not warrior women.
You went to the enemy's house,
right?
And a blind man could see that.
Yeah,
ain't no way in hell they on the level of Winnie. You know what I mean? If the truth be told, Nelson couldn't even stay with Winnie because of her fierceness and her loyalty and her desire for blood, like she should have for that Yoruba cracker devil bastard that hurt our people, just like we should feel the same way about these characters here. You know, it just amazes me as I look at this day and I look at all that's going on with Martin Luther King. It's heartbreaking, man. Yeah. It's heartbreaking to see that after 50 years, we just haven't realized that integrating into this thing has not been nothing but detrimental to our human spirit, to our survival, just to our total being as a people. But we just don't get it.
No, we don't.
Don't get it, man.
And see.
And it's a painful thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that gets me is, man, I was listening earlier today to this Negro Mark Thompson on Sirius Radio.
Right.
And, you know, he had Martin's son on there. And Martin's son was talking about his daughter, man, and talking about when his daughter was 2 years old or 2 years ago, whatever one it was, she was talking about gun violence. I mean, to propagandize your child into certain things, it's just sickening. It's sad. Propaganda your child of being an African. You know what I mean? And the thing is, his child is never going to want for nothing. His child is never going to be anything but like them damn Puff the Magic Negro Obama children. Integrated into whiteness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Them Negroes children don't serve no purpose to the race. I'm going to keep it real. I don't have no value for no Negro on the planet that want to integrate into whiteness. Use an enemy. I don't care who you are.
Well,
just like Obama, that Negro, in all the time that he was in office, he never stood up to white supremacy in regards to the total destruction of the lives of African people here and abroad, man. Matter of fact, he assisted in it. So when people start talking about the clown that's in office now, they say, hey, man, this is a white man's country, and that's your boy. Let him do his thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not mad at him. Hey, you know what I mean? What am I going to be mad at somebody who's trying to protect the interests of his people? At least he got the good enough damn sense to do what he's supposed to do to keep his people on top. So how could I be mad at him? It's just a shame you dumb Negroes ain't figured out how to do that for your people.
But see, the problem I have, though, Jay, is that they do it at our expense. So for me, looking at what has happened when Europeans came out of that dark age, that medieval age, when they were land poor, resource poor, and people poor, and then they began to wake up, kicking the Moors and the Sephardic Jews out of the western part of so-called the continent of Europe, you know, and then going out explorations, adventuring out, like when Marco Polo went to China, comes back with pasta. That's why people think spaghetti is Italian, but spaghetti or pasta is Chinese, just like they think rice is Chinese, but rice is African. You know, but yet when they went out, they began to just go out and look at shit and take people's stuff in the name of. I claim this in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, Germany, you name it. You know?
Culturally branded. That's all they do.
Yeah.
That's what Yoruba is famous for, claiming it and rebranding. And then, you know, if you really think about all of the things that have been created destructively in this society, other than gunpowder, the Yoruba is the one behind it. Just think about that.
Oh.
The man is total death.
Hey, Jay, I said one thing about the Caucasian, in his history, looking at his history, because as Malik Shabazz says, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. One thing about Caucasian in their history, even in ancient, they always found a better way to kill you. Crossbows, catapults, you name it, torture, the Inquisition, all those mechanisms of torture. Frank, you got something, Brother Frank?
No, I'm just agreeing with you. That's right. They torture. That's what they do. They're about weapons and killing and mass destruction. It's always been about murder. That's their innate nature.
It's nothing about being anything life-giving unless they can make a profit off of it.
Exactly.
If you think about it. That's it. That's the only time they're going to do anything that's life-giving is if they can make a profit off of it. Other than that, it's just pure destruction. And they don't even care. They have no qualms whatsoever putting you to death or putting you in a situation of death. And that's just... That's just their total purpose.
What's interesting on the planet... This planet, you know, I ain't talking about, because, you know, I don't deal with what the so-called Christians got to say about any damn thing, okay? So I ain't going on that. I try to deal with objective science and those individuals who look at the planet and look at the situation and environment and all that thing objectively. And what they say, the planet is hundreds of millions years old. The planet is old. The evidence, even why there is oil, is because of the fossils. Because of the dinosaurs and all the other things that died and been compressed to create the oil that we have. So there's proof that there were dinosaurs on the planet. But the point I'm making is they live for millions of years. And human beings, in a time span, in a time frame, human existence, let's just say 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Out of the 24 hours, we only been here like 10 minutes. If you look at it, 24 hours, and look what we have done, particularly Europeans, because there's other people on the planet who have existed in harmony with their environment. But look what has happened. The greed, the selfishness, all of that has been put upon the planet by the European has caused tremendous destruction. I mean, creating nuclear energy. That's the, man, you see, I'm stuttering here. I just can't believe how serious they want to maintain nuclear energy when the waste of it, you know, is so destructive. Look what's happening. Hey, pretty soon, because of Fukushima in Japan, that was destroyed because of that tsunami.
Uh-huh.
You know, already they're seeing all kind of deformities, all kinds of the fish. I wouldn't eat anything out of the Pacific Ocean. You're going to see all kinds of stuff. So I'm just saying is that since that time, we as human beings on this planet have done so much destruction. Climate change or global warming, whatever how you want to term it, is real. It is real. But yet, when the scientists said, this is about 30-something years ago, because I'm sitting at the firehouse. I'm at the firehouse reading this article on climate change about 30-something years ago, maybe 25, whatever. But anyway, they said because of what we're doing, causing this greenhouse effect and so forth, the climate will change. And what it ain't saying, you know, that the climate will be warmer all year round. No, that's not the deal. The climate will have extremes. There'll be extreme cold, extreme heat, extremes. And you've seen that. That's just like what's happening right now. To me, if the United States, which is supposed to have all of this wealth and all this ability, it could have been so easy for the United States to repair Puerto Rico, which Puerto Rico is a commonwealth of the United States. But yet,
that just shows the nature and who and what the Yorugu is by what they have allowed to happen to the people of Puerto Rico. The sad thing is that the Puerto Rico people haven't put no clock back on it. They haven't gotten to the point to where as they've been able to really show the world the manner in which they've been treated. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that right there is just plain in view and sight. And mind you, we keep on talking talking about Puerto Rico, but what about the other island?
Yeah.
We never bring them up. We never even talk about them. Nor, in all honesty, is it in our consciousness?
Right. You're right.
No, I mean, that just goes to show how we're programmed as a people. But listen, let me ask you this quick question, Oshie. What is the deal with Bernice King? Is she a member of the gay mafia?
I can't speak to that, dear brother. I don't know. She's a minister, and just like her brothers.
That don't mean nothing. Shoot.
I know it don't mean it. I'm just saying the fact that.
I'm just real curious. why she's never been married or anything like that. I figure men would be knocking down the door.
Well, yeah, because she's attractive.
I
don't think she's a bad looking woman. I think she, you know, she's very, no. But I
very intelligent woman, a crazy Christian, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's definitely a crazy Christian. You can tell it. You know what I mean? She has some ability to articulate.
She's not
my type in a sense of her Christianity. But right. I mean, no, I'm just really shocked and surprised that she never fought to her husband. You would think some of them pork chop chicken eating preachers would want her at their side,
yeah,
or some deacon or something. You know what I mean? To claim her as their wife.
The only thing I could speak to Bernice King and Dexter King and Martin III is the fact that they play upon their father's legacy, and that benefits
Dexter,
them.
Dexter, Lord knows, where is Dexter? Dexter got some serious issues, man. I don't even think Dexter is in Atlanta right now.
He probably isn't. You know, I mean, I don't know if he's here physically now because of the commemoration of the assassination.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I don't even think he's in Memphis.
Yeah.
I haven't seen no pictures of him in Memphis.
Yeah. Well, you know,
Dexter
had his own ideas of trying to get money and get paid. And so, in fact, he
want to be a white or a white man.
Yeah.
You know, he messing around with them Yerugals, and then I done heard things, you know, that he's a member of the mafia.
I'm not speaking to it because I don't know, and I'll only speak to what I do know.
I'm just wondering if maybe somebody knows, because, you know, I'm just shocked and surprised that he's not in Memphis, because it seems to me who's ever anybody in Black America is in Memphis. I'm trying to think who's not there. I'm surprised.
Negro
Joe Madison wasn't there.
Oh, yeah, Joe Madison, I'm here.
Oh, that's the Eagle. Master Negro there, boy. Lord have mercy.
Have you ever,
know,
hey.
Shuffling, coning, and scratching, and itching.
Have you ever called?
An example of that Negro.
Have you ever called in on his show?
Oh, man. I called in once.
Did he cuss you out?
And he started yelling.
Did he cuss you out?
I just told you he started yelling. I forgot what I said to him, but I know I called them out on the white man, and I called them out on the white man and integration and how it's been nothing but a failure, mm-hmm, if you put it into its most honest and true context. Oh, he went off, man.
Now, no, because let me say this. They will defend that. They will defend that tremendously. Those people of that particular ilk, they will defend that to the hilt. You would think, like, man, well, number one, that's their bread. That's their money. You see? So you know, and see, the problem, of course, is that we live in America, and America's about individualism. I got mine. Get yours. And if you didn't get yours, it's your fault, because it's there to get. Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence.
Hey, Oshie, imagine you calling that Negro and get that Negro on your program. I guarantee you it won't last more than maybe 7-8 minutes. And he'll try to get off. And when you check him, he'll still run, because he don't want to be confronted for the type of coon, syphilis Negro he is. I mean, you know, Sharpton, the one difference between him and Sharpton is, Sharpton will let you say what you got to say, and then he'll do a dance on it.
Yeah.
He'll do the typical dance to make it seem as though what you're saying is not logical. But, I mean, you know, the reality is, like you say, it's scripted. I mean, they, you know, Sharpton's made a lot of money through that radio and through MSNBC and things of that nature. I mean, think about it. He's on the payroll of MSNBC probably at around $600,000-$700,000 a year doing a one-day show.
That
coming
much?
In a couple of times during the week doing commentary.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't make that much money. I don't even think Joanne Reed, who is one of the most mammiest Negro penis women on television there. I mean, if the Democratic Party was to become irrelevant tomorrow, I don't know what she may do. I truly believe she would cop with Clint for a moment committing suicide. That's how much she loves the Democratic Party and what it supposedly stands for and what it will give the opportunity to our people. But you know the thing about people like that is, man, their children, they do well. They're incorporated into the system. They're given a lot of opportunities that me and your children are not given. And they're able to live a non-threatening life to the rule. And, you know, that's what parents want for their kids.
Yeah.
And you can't be mad at them. I'm not mad at them.
No, because
I just want your child one day wake up and smell the truth and see what's really going on and seeing how your mama and your daddy done compromised the race on the whole. But, no, you know what I'm saying? That's why we've evolved over the last 50 years to the position that we're in, to whereas African ideas, principles, and values is in a total conflict with European, Negro-pean values.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Brother
Jay. I mean, you got to take it into consideration.
Yeah.
You know, where are we from, let's say, at the height of the teachings of Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, the conscious movement moving forward, and where is this Negro peen at today? There's a portion of the Negro peen that's doing quite well. There's a portion of that Negro peen that is not doing quite well, that children aren't going to have the opportunities that their parents have. But the parents of Negro peens like Joanne Reed and the rest of them, they're going to have those opportunities.
Sure.
They're going to be what you call the gatekeepers.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
But the average person, you understand, like me and you, OC, we're always going to be in a fight. It's like Negroes, think about it, that you worked with that were pure Negro peens in the fire department that retired.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself this question. What is their position of their children now? Do you think after
not
they
too good.
Are in this world 40 years from now that they're going to be in the same position
no.
as their parents?
No.
Be honest.
No.
There you go.
No.
There you go.
Brother Frank.
There you go.
Let me get my co-host in on this conversation, brother. Yeah, you know, we talked about the symbolism without substance. Stick around, Jay. We talked about the symbolism without substance. And the imagery of Dr. King and how it has been co-opted, how it has been presented, particularly to us and to the world. For Hearst, first you have a man that is vilified. He's demonized. He is just, as J. Edgar Hoover said, the most dangerous man in America, you know. And then when he says does some things that they truly don't like, now... Oh, brother Ralph, I appreciate that. Brother Ralph just texted me and says, Sharpton makes about $500,000 a year? Wow.
Wow. $600,000.
Yeah. Wow. He was full-time.
From MSNBC.
Yeah.
Probably around three to four from the radio.
Right.
I'm not sure, but I
right.
know
I know he's in the $1 million category.
Man, that's a
deal. And we're not talking about what he gets for speeches
right.
and all of these other stuff. Dog and pony shows
yep.
through man.
All the other multiple revenue streams that Al Sharpton has, you know. And to me, you know, in every situation, just like you've seen him in Sacramento, you know, I don't know if he did the eulogy or not. He's done the eulogy at a few of the people who have been murdered by the hands of the police and so
yes.
forth, you know. But anyway, getting back to Dr. King. Now, go ahead,
we
Frank.
We know he's a puppet. We consider that he's getting paid by the ruble. So we know he's their puppet. So he's a figurehead, but he, like you said, he's back to symbolism without substance. He does nothing for our community. He's just a symbol. And he's working on their payroll. Now, we knew he was on their payroll secretly, but now, you know, once he's on the show, he's openly on their payroll. So there's nothing he's really doing for us because they censor what he said. They censor what he speaks about issues and what he does. So that's a puppet, no true leader, no true black leader. They refer him as a black leader, but he's not.
Well, you know, all of these folks that are supposed to be leaders, the ones that they put out front is actually a misleadership. You know, and they don't have anybody that's going to speak hard on the issues about what's really happening.
Exactly.
You see.
In fact, Hoover said.
Go ahead, Frank.
Hoover said there will not be another black Messiah unless we create him.
That's
remember
right.
Hoover said that?
That's right. He said.
Yeah, but that won't happen because of the mindset of, let me read you this right quick. I want y'all to listen to this. This is the mindset of the Negro peen, the incorporated into madness. Just listen to this. Can someone at the White House please take Donald Trump's phone and tweet a Martin Luther King remembrance so that we can pretend for at least one day that he doesn't have such a glaring race problem? Please and thank you. Now, I want you to analyze that, Brother Frank and Brother Oshi, because the person who just made that quote is a sick Negro.
Yeah.
Analyze that.
Brother Jay have me laughing. I can hear you talk all day. I ain't so listening to you, man.
I know. Jay be on the one, man.
No. Seriously, I know the way I say it has meant, in a sense, to be funny and comical and put a little laughter in it. But in all good seriousness, explain to me why it is you find it necessary as a black man to ask your enemy to say something nice about the person that they're responsible for killing so that he could supposedly make Negroes feel good. That's mad.
That's it.
This is the thing that infuriates me all the time.
That's what we're...
That's the thing that gets me hot.
Yeah.
Why must you do that? Why can't you just explain that the crack ain't gonna do it because he don't like your black wine?
Because you know why, Jay? Because it's, once again, symbolism without substance. That's what it is. It's symbolism without substance. They rather have the image as opposed to having what's real and tangible and life-changing and life-sustaining. They just rather have the damn image. They rather have the image of Donald Trump saying something on this day 50 years ago, Dr. King was assassinated, and we remember him with all the blah, 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 bull. They rather have that. They rather have that happen.
This is absolutely, you know, something to be honest with you, brother. It brings nothing but anger and venom into me for Negroes like that. I just like to put that burning neck crown on people like that.
Winnie Mandela.
I really do.
Some Winnie.
They're more harmful to our liberation than anything. I mean, what would possess you as a man to beg your oppressor to be good to you? How do you think we're in this position? Because we were constantly begging our oppressor to treat us better instead of doing the thing that the Creator wanted you to do. Take his head off or die. Let's keep it real. Let's be honest. That's what the oppressor really, really is meant to do. It's to be put to death.
if there is a God, I can't see how God, really, honestly, could ever be mad at you for wanting to kill your oppressor. If there is a God, I really want to understand it. So you're saying that God allows for you to be beaten and to be brutalized from the time you're born to the time you die. And you're supposed to just accept it, because if you accept it in a most humbling way, you can then sit on his knee. You can then sit on the Sky Daddy's knee. That's the biggest bunch of BS I've ever tried to understand in my life. Think about it.
What you say, you sound humorous, but then I hear pain and sincerity in what you're saying. I mean, to go from the crib to the grave, suffering, mistreated, and believe that's the way it's supposed to be. You're right. Completely wrong, you know? But you can tell that, who does that ideology benefit? That ideology benefits the oppressed. That's why the oppressor wants you to believe in that bullcrap ideology. That's how you use this to oppress you, control you, let you dog style. That concept, waiting for your pie in the sky. To see how our society truly runs, if you look at when someone's running for president, for example, you look at how political campaigns work, and they use a lot of imagery, like a candidate kissing a baby, or a candidate rolling his sleeves up to have a beer with the average Joe. Everything is all about symbolism, you know? Mm-hmm. And the white man masters symbolism, you know? He programs us to the symbols that he does, and it controls us, it dociles us. We are programmed to believe the worst about ourselves, to divide about ourselves, and we are programmed to idolize the white man.
Mm-hmm.
The part of his programming of us was our religion. It's no coincidence that they give us the image of a white Jesus. When we believe in a white Jesus, a white angel, a white God, it creates we build a profound adoration towards whiteness that subconsciously transfers over to white people, makes us dog child towards them. The white man has been using imagery on us since day one. We have to understand, in the art of war, it says to, I need to overcome enemy, you got to study his tactics. And we got to study these tactics the white man has used upon us. Instead of falling victim to it over and over, he uses
total brainwashing. It's total brainwashing from the time you are conceived. No.
Yes.
From the time you conceive, because in your mother's womb, they're always talking that nonsense. You understand?
Yes.
Do you understand the psychological torment that an African woman had to have, knowing that she was producing the seed of her rapist?
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever understand or even think about what the African woman?
Hold on. And can you imagine what the man was going through when this is supposed to be your wife and she's got a baby in her stomach? And
we're not even talking on that level. We could go even further. The brutalization and the rape of African men at will.
Yeah.
Whenever that freak demon soul decided he wanted to do that. To be beaten. To be treated in the fashion in which African men were treated. Male as African women. Do we even sometimes take a minute to sit down with ourselves and really get an understanding in the grasp of what this white man has done to us? We haven't.
Jay?
We don't even think that it's existed.
Jay?
Yeah.
Jay and Brother Frank, that was then. It is now. We forgive them. We forgive them for they do not know what they have done. And now we're going to share in this great country of ours. And we will be one again, one United States of America, the ideal of America. We're going to espouse that. We're going to promote that, the ideal of America, the shining example on the hill, liberty and justice for all. So help us,
was
God.
Was that Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, Martin Luther King, or Barack Obama, or who? I just like to know who put forward that quote, because I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know who it was, but it could have been anyone out of them three at the top. Now the fourth one lives it. But I mean, you know, it's like, in all seriousness, we never take the time to even sit down with our kids and just say that to them. Do you understand the torment that African women went through? Do you understand? Baba Baruti, he did a post, and in the post, it talked about what happened to us as a people when we were coming over on the slave ship. I think I may have it on my page. But what he was basically saying is all of the things that we had to live through coming over on that passage. Oh, here we go. It's right here. It says, imagine lying in filth, disease, vomit, pus, slime, everything unimaginable, fleas, all of that we had to lay in and not be able to move for days at a time to come here and to serve this Urugu. Now, I don't know, I'm not sure on how many days it took.
90 days.
90 days?
90 days.
So, you see, so to think about that, to just the picture to make you want to cry, to think that you laying in a spot, brother, the size of a casket, and not being able to move, to defecate, to urinate, and to do all of these things on yourself for 90 days to come here to serve this piece of garbage. Yeah. Think about that. And no black people ever thinks about that at all, brother. Because if you ever thought about it, it'd drive you insane. Think about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we want to emulate, and we want to be like this dog. This dog, we have a love for this dog, for someone who to today has just change the direction and improve upon the torture of African people? Think about it. He's just gotten better in our oppression. That's all. He's made it to where you think these little trinkets that you have and these little enjoyments that you have is worth continuously to serve this bastard. And we don't get it, bro.
Yeah.
We don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you would just point that out to your children and let your children come to grips and understanding that, then if they could choose and they decide they want to serve the Urugu, so be it.
And see,
but you can't say you haven't told them.
And see, we need to tell them, because you're not going to get it in the educational institutions under European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. Because right now, the Koch brothers are rewriting the history books. In fact, one history book states that the indigenous people were asked to move. They were asked to move, and they did it to make more room for more Europeans to come and settle. They were asked to move, you know, and then you're talking about
removing the word slavery out of textbooks that coming out of Texas.
Yes.
Yes. They control the narrative, and they're changing our history. A black parent who relies on their children to be totally educated from the white perspective, they're failing as parents. So I totally agree with you. You know, I run into black people who says, nah, man, the Jews had it worse than black folks. The Jews had it worse than us because we're given an education. They're educating us to feel simply Jews who Holocaust, which is pretty over-exaggerated, lasted less than 12 years. You know? And ours is going on for 400 years and millions more dead. We have less sympathy, too, because we're being programmed and miseducated by whites. That's the problem.
And Franklin, I don't even entertain that Jewish Holocaust nonsense, man. If you're a black person and you say that to me, I'm even not going to say anything to you. I'm going to cuss you out brutally. That's how I respond to that. I don't respond in any type of sympathy, any type of kindness, any type of compassion. Nah, bro, I don't deal with that. And I've been in situations to where I've had Negroes say that to me, and they just get it, B. They just get it. I mean, I've almost had to get into physical confrontations because I just become so brutally dogmatic on the person. Because there's no way in hell you could ever have any type of above sympathy of a Jew in comparison to the Holocaust that we of African people have suffered and continuously suffered to today. I don't care about no Jewish Holocaust. It don't even felt in me. I have no warmth of sympathy or nothing. I don't care.
Yeah, our perceptions are being controlled by those who control the narrative that goes into our mind.
Well, that's the problem with us. But you know something, Franklin? The problem is this. Those who control the narrative have the right to do what they do. Until you change the narrative and are able to fight back against the narrative and put forward your own narrative, then you deem to be the slave.
Yes.
That's us. But look, I gotta run, fellas. Enjoy the rest of the show. Oshi, keep up the good work, Brother Franklin. It's always an honor to speak with you, brother. And listen, let's remember this on this King Day. Integration has given us a little bit, but fighting integration in the long run will give us more.
I say.
Yes, okay.
All right, Brother Jay.
What, 2 hours left?
I tell you, man, we only got 10 minutes left of the program, man. But, you know, I think based upon what we have talked about and things that we have done today, at least for me, there's some satisfaction in terms of getting the information that we wanted to get out about Dr. King and all the misconceptions. And also, too, the fact is that, once again, it's symbolism without substance because they control it. You know, and when I looked at the documentaries that I've seen of Dr. King and the one I just seen recently, which is a new one, there's a lot of footage that I have never seen before. And although those who are speaking are the people who are close to Dr. King as he was coming up, you know, in that struggle. And it's definitely worth a look. But once again, what really is the end game? Dr. King's end game, before he, you know, to the time that he realized how mean and evil spirited this son of a, he said to Harry Belafonte, once again, I feel I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. Or another one is, I'm trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, you know, another metaphor. The bottom line is that this system that Europeans have created for themselves, a perpetuating system, has never been and will never be to the benefit of African people on the continent and anywhere else in the diaspora. In fact, the hatred that is shown to us everywhere, the fact that we are bleaching our skin, we are processing our hair, color context, and so forth, is because, just as the brother's book is, Dr. Fox, addicted to white. We have been trained to be addicted to white, to hate ourselves and to hate each other. And so, you know, I'm hoping that those who understand this, and as they look at Dr. King and what he was about, will begin to change the narrative. What do you say, brother?
I totally agree. I totally agree with you, brother. It's about changing the narrative, you know? At the time's running out, but I want to say, you know, I love your show and I love what you're doing, you know? And I'm always honored to be on your show. I'm always honored to be here. And I hope you keep having me in the future. And I just said, I love the show.
No, let me say this, man, because of the things that you have written, the books you have, and your commentary, it's welcomed. So every Wednesday, man, every Wednesday we'll be here. And because, see, this is Brother Frank, this is what this program is about. This program is about trying to put something on the minds of our people, because it's a battle for our minds. That's what it is. It's a fight. We're in a serious battle for our minds. And as the saying goes, free your mind and your ass will follow. So what we're trying to do is help to free the African mind.
Yes.
You know? And so I know that there may be some shows like mine, maybe. I know on this, maybe on Black Talk Radio Network. I know on Time for an Awakening. On Time for an Awakening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, we're speaking the same. Dr. Rogers, we're speaking the same. I listen to Sister POC, you know, because they're young folks. They're young folks. In fact, I wanted to call in one time because one of the young brothers that she was talking with, he was still trying to say that, you know, this political process can work for us, you know. You know, not really, you know. It, to me, but see, I understand that because there's that disconnect to that real struggle of the 60s into the 70s and 80s when we thought that, you know, the system was going to be okay. They had affirmative action. You know, some of us got into the middle class because of that and so forth. So it would continue to progress for us. And now that we know that stuff has ended and some of these young folks still think as millennials that that stuff is passe because why? They buy into what America's about, individualism, materialism, greed, and violence, you know? And that was the three things. Those were the three things that Dr. King, towards the end of his life, wanted to really deal with. The racism, the economic injustice, the deep-seated capitalism, and, of course, the militarism. And so if he was living today, considering all that, what you see Trump happening, the huge disparity of the wealth gap, all of these things, the militarization around the globe where America has a base in damn near every country around the globe. You see? So we have a lot to talk about, brother, over the next few months and years.
I know we're running out of time, but when you said he was here today, that reminds me. In the show, The Boondocks, in this episode with Dr. King Returns.
Oh, isn't that great?
But here's the deal, though. In that show, it was written by a white person and a white director. Okay, even though it had black artists doing the voices. But if you pay attention in the movie, Dr. King was not disappointed in the white establishment. He was disappointed
in us,
the black people.
Right,
he
was disappointed
in
us.
He said, you lazy Negroes, I'm going to Canada.
Right.
And so when you look at it, we saw the narrative being the disappointment was black people.
Right.
That we are the problem. So it's ahead of we're watching it, we're being entertained, but we're being downloaded with a narrative that we are the problem.
Yeah.
And that's how it was tricky through the Boondocks. It was actually hurting us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because, see, we're not the problem.
No, we're not.
You know, we're not the problem. To me, it's the evildoer is the problem.
Yes. I think we're going to have time, so I'm going to stop talking. I'm good to go.
All right, dear. All right, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, one love, my brother. You take care.
All right. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the Caucasian, the European, the cracker, the Urugu, the white man, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed that whenever we come on, this is what we're going to talk about. How we can help to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because Africa, under the feet of African people, is all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. It is our obligation as African people to help free Africa. Be with us on Friday. I'm going to have a guest, Brother Kenneth Marshall out of Dallas. He has a book on relationships, but also some good commentaries. So I look forward to talking with him. Brothers and sisters, you have been listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you.